For Spokane Public Radio, I'm Chris Messini. My guest today is essayist, poet, and pie lady, Kate Lebo. She's the author of the cookbook Pie School and the poetry chapbook Seven Prayers to Kathy McMorris Rogers, and co-editor with Samuel Ligon of Pie and Whiskey, Writers Under the Influence of Butter and Booze, as well as co-host of the popular Pie and Whiskey events. Kate Lebo's new book is The Book of Difficult Fruit, Arguments for the Tart, Tender, and Unruly with Recipes. She'll be hosting a multi-bookstore virtual release extravaganza with Auntie's Third Place Books, Village Books, and Browsers Books on Monday, April 5th at 6 p.m. And she joins me now to talk about the new book. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Chris.
Thanks for talking with me.
Oh, it's good to be here.
So The Book of Difficult Fruit is one of those books that's hard to sort of sum up really neatly or characterize. It's a collection of essays.
I barely remember what it's about.
Yeah.
At this point.
And I think the word meditations is a good way to describe it, because each chapter is inspired by a different fruit, and fruit is used generously here. They're not all necessarily fruits.
They're not all necessarily fruits.
No. And it's an abecedarian. So each chapter is a letter of the alphabet, which also creates some problems in terms of fruits. But
exactly.
It's a really fun. So I guess, how did you sort of conceive the project of this book? And, you know, did that did that just evolve as a convenient way to put it together? Or how did it come together?
I mean, yes. So many influences came to bear on how I figured out how to write this book. I mean, one of the ways I think about it is that I've long felt like I've led this kind of bifurcated creative life of being a baker on one hand and being a writer on the other. And in this book, I was really trying to join both of those creative impulses and borrow from kind of genre elements of the different books that belong to those creative impulses. And a thing that I love about the abecedarian form is the way that it kind of fools you into thinking that it's complete, that you have represented everything, the way the encyclopedia gives you the impression that everything under the sun is covered within its pages. Of course, it's not. Of course, encyclopedias are biased no matter what they try to do. They have to leave stuff out. So I wanted to fool around with that, knowing that I wanted to present, you know, literal factual information about these real fruits while also tying them to very subjective experiences in my life.
Yeah, well, reading it, really, it feels like just having a fun conversation with like a really smart, really interesting person like yourself, because it's very freewheeling in its associations of like, you'll be talking about how to prepare a fruit, and then you'll dip into, you know, childhood memories or natural history. And it's just really fun to just go with you wherever you want to take yourself. And I think a good example of that is the chapter on huckleberries, which folks in Spokane and in the Northwest, I think, will really enjoy, where you bring in the Salish language and sort of compare Salish with the huckleberry. So I wonder if you could read a little bit from that chapter for us.
Sure, I would love to. So this is on page 104 for anyone out there with a copy of the book yet. And in this, I'm going to speak a couple of the words of the Salish language that Lorraine Wiley from the Salish School taught me. I'm probably not going to get it exactly right.
That's okay.
But I'm going to say it in the spirit of learning.
Great.
Okay. When I ask Lorraine to teach me how to say huckleberry in Salish, she says, "Close your eyes. I'm going to say the word and you're going to listen. Then say it back to me." I am hard of hearing. In conversation, if I can see a face, I can hear better. With my eyes closed, without facial expression or the speech of eye contact, I'm afraid I'll mishear. But it's not like that. Instead, with my eyes closed, the buzz of the cafe fades, and I tune into Lorraine's voice, willing myself to feel comfortable in this posture of reception. Her voice is the only thing. She's saying, "Sta'ashk, sta'ashk, sta'ashk." To catch the sounds, I imagine they are topography. This one has a steep incline, a sharp peak, then a shallow descent with a quick hitch up at the end. "Now you," Lorraine says. I fumble through, and she says, "Good, try again." This is one of the methods she and her teachers are using to revive Salish, repeating words, playing games with them, as you would with any child, until the words lodge themselves next to English. It is hard for me to get the sounds right. I'm embarrassed by this. I wonder if this tiny shame is a boundary I have momentarily crossed, if I've moved from a place where I am comfortable and fluent into a place where I am an outsider and strange, possibly suspect, definitely illiterate, and in the old-fashioned sense, dumb. She says it again. St'ashk. I try to master the air between st, which sounds the way an English speaker would expect, and kha, which sounds like ash. Then the front of the throat, k, sound of k. We are children in the language, she says. We are learning, and we will get better. Mistakes are part of that, and nothing to be ashamed of. In the car, leaving our interview, I try to say the word again, and I can't. It's gone. I can't even recall how it begins. But I can remember how to say medicine. Mrimstin. A little trip on the R, so you skip directly from M to R to the eem sound, then a new syllable, familiar this time, stin. When trying to pronounce Salish, English speakers might imagine an I in there, stin, but the sound is shorter, acutely angled from the T to the N, not the full I, like pin, sound. I imagine this is a hollow my tongue steps over. When I can't remember the Salish word for huckleberry, I say the Salish word for medicine.
That was Kate Lebo reading from her new book, The Book of Difficult Fruit, from her chapter about huckleberries. I'm curious, did you go into any of these essays sort of knowing what you wanted to cover? Like, oh, when I'm writing this huckleberry chapter, I know I want to talk about language. Or sure. Was it just a process of, like you said, playful discovery?
It depends. I mean, I think with huckleberry, one of the things I went into it wanting to understand was how a food that's sacred to the tribes in our area is also incredibly precious to descendants of colonizers, to the newer immigrants to this area. And how do I write an essay that includes all of those, you know, ways that the huckleberry is meaningful that doesn't kind of elide or cover up any of the conflict within that, but also, you know, kind of shows how we as a mixed community share this fruit in common. I also wanted to get, you know, information from the USDA, the U.S. Forest Service, the way the government, U.S. government has written about huckleberries, the way missionaries have written about native traditions of picking huckleberries. And I wanted to talk to our native community and get more indigenous ways of knowing within that piece as well. Weaving those all together were really important to me.
Well, you know, another really fun aspect of this book is there's recipes at the end of every chapter, which you also tried and experimented with. And I imagine there's many, many recipes that didn't make it into the book that you tried. So, you know, talk about developing those recipes for these things that you had no experience with. So I'm thinking of Medlar, which you talk about Shakespeare a lot because it's sort of name checked in some Shakespeare plays. But it's a really strange fruit in that you have to sort of let it rot before you can do anything with it. And then you're kind of confused about what to do with it. So how'd you come up with those recipes?
Well, that was a combination of going online, seeing what, you know, Dr. Google
would
tell me.
That's what we all do, just Google things.
Right. And Google can deliver all sorts of information that's useful, but it can't really deliver knowledge or practice.
Yeah.
What I knew from Google was this was an old fruit. Most of us have lost any sort of familiarity with it or practice with it. And I could possibly make jelly from it or jam. I could possibly eat it fresh. Why not? What I ended up doing, I went up to Quillisasket Farm, where my mentor, Laura Lee Misterly, lives. And she is just a consummate explorer of foods. She's playing around all the time. And together, I mean, she started to think of, like, what are some food forms that we could try to shove this fruit into and see if it works? Let's try ice cream. Let's try ketchup. Let's try jam. Let's try bitters. Let's try liqueur, all of that. So we just thought
tried
of
it.
a food form, tried it. None of them worked. The only thing that worked so well. It became such a reward for
which
all of that.
Which was the jelly.
Trial. That was the jelly. And what was amazing was, I mean, usually what's so delicious about jelly is, you know, taking kind of the essence of the fruit, the juice, and finding a way to give it a solid form so that you can lump it on your cheese or on your bread or whatever you want to do with it and enjoy it. In this case, I mean, medlars aren't really juicy. You have to kind of make a decoction of them. You have to boil the hell out of them and take that water and then gel that. And it makes this delicious kind of taste of fall. I mean, if you know that scent when you go from a cold outside to a warm inside and you get that kind of rush of rotting, sweet rotting leaves.
Yeah, it's yeah, like I know that. Exactly.
It's delicious.
I'm talking with Kate Lebo. She's the author of The Book of Difficult Fruit, Arguments for the Tart, Tender, and Unruly with Recipes. And you're hosting a virtual event with Auntie's Bookstore here in Spokane, Third Place Books in Seattle, Village Books in Bellingham, and Browser's Bookstore in Olympia, which just seems like such an efficient way to do a regional book tour.
I mean, why not?
All
we have to do it all
event.
Online anyway. Yeah. Let's just have a party across the state.
Yeah, so that's on April 5th. And so what can people expect from that big, giant virtual party?
Oh, that's going to be so fun. So one of the things that they can expect, if they pre-order the book from any of these bookstores, if they're the first 20, they get a vanilla bean from me. And these beans smell so delicious. I have a pile of them on my desk right now. I feel like a vanillionaire.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. The event itself is going to be super fun. Kim Adonisio, the poet, is going to help me launch this book. She also has a new book out right now called Now We're Getting Somewhere.
Okay.
So she'll read some poems from that. And then I will read, some excellent essay from this book. We won't go on too long. We'll go on just long enough. There'll be a Q&A. And I will also miss all you people that I would have loved to have seen in person at an actual party were it not COVID days.
Yeah. Well, my guest has been Kate Lebo. Her new book is The Book of Difficult Fruit, Arguments for the Tart, Tender, and Unruly with Recipes, out April 5th from Farrar, Straus, and Giroux. You can find more information about her virtual release party at auntiesbooks.com. Kate, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you, Chris. It's great to be here.